RN, your world unfolding.
G'day there, Julian Morrow with you for Friday Drive on RN. And coming up on the show tonight, patently excluded. The United States Supreme Court has made a landmark ruling unanimously on the patenting of human genes, just as an appeal on the very same questions is pending in Australia. We'll speak to the lawyer who is running the Australian case. Plus, the situation on the streets of Turkey. Turkish opposition MP and international woman of courage, Shafak Pavey, the woman who shares a suite with her political opponent, the Prime Minister of Turkey, will join us to discuss the very concerning situation there. And after seven, of course, it's question time. We will be asking the questions no one else is asking about the week's news. That's all coming up on Friday Drive. Our opening track there, Conflict of a Man, by a band called Eremage. They're a New York quartet who've just visited Australia recently for the Melbourne International Jazz Festival. Of course, all our music selections on Friday Drive come from Simon Aveling, who keeps us well and truly on the pulse of musical developments. And of course, we like to know what you think of both the music but also the talk on the show, and you can do that by texting us on 0418 226 576 or via Twitter. The handle is at RNDrive. Well, mine is at Jules Morrow for all your defamation needs. And, well, speaking of defamation, it's about time on RN Drive to head to court. Although, at least in the first instance, it's the US Supreme Court, because overnight there was a ruling that human genes cannot be patented, and that may affect the outcome of a court case which is currently underway in Australia and which we discussed earlier this year on Friday Drive. The American ruling quashes breast cancer gene patents held by biotech company Myriad Genetics, and Myriad's Australian subsidiary is involved in a legal battle over the same issue being run on behalf of a Brisbane woman with breast cancer and the organisation Cancer Voices Australia. Professor Peter Cashman is one of the barristers involved in the test case, and he joins us now. Good evening, Professor Cashman.
Good evening, Julian.
Well, look, firstly, can you just give us a brief outline of the Supreme Court decision and your assessment of its implications?
Well, the Supreme Court held that the Myriad discovery of the particular genetic mutations associated with a higher risk of ovarian and breast cancer in women amounted to a mere discovery and was not a patentable invention. The reason for that was the characteristics of the isolated DNA were the same in its isolated form as occurs in the human body. That is the genetic code, which is critical to the testing to see if women have this particular propensity for breast or ovarian cancer. That isolated DNA was held to be similar or the same as that which occurs in the human body, and therefore it wasn't patentable.
And if I recall correctly, when we spoke to Rebecca Gilson and about the federal court decision, I mean, it sounds like the Supreme Court decision is just the exact opposite of what's been held here, because I think it was the act of human intervention and taking the material outside the body which rendered the material patentable. Is that right?
Well, when the case first went before the federal court in Australia, Justice Nicholas accepted Myriad's argument that the isolation of the gene or the DNA led to what he described as an artificial state of affairs, and that therefore meant that it was patentable, having regard to previous decisions and in particular a particular decision of the High Court in Australia. Therefore, so far, the patent has been upheld as valid to date, but that matter is currently fixed for hearing before five judges of the federal court in an appeal that's fixed for hearing on the 7th and 8th of August this year.
Right, okay, so the timing of the US Supreme Court decision, intriguing then. Now, what little I recall of my time at law school suggests that the United States Supreme Court decision's not going to be in any way binding on Australian courts, but presumably it's a significant development and could be very persuasive.
Well, it's clearly a significant development. We now have 9 justices of the United States Supreme Court and 2 federal United States judges all declaring this patent invalid. And although the test in Australia is different, obviously that has an important bearing on one's thinking about patentability, but as I'm involved in the forthcoming appeal, I don't want to make predictions about how an Australian court would deal with
it. I can imagine that
but
might be the case.
It is of international significance because a significant proportion of the entire human genome is now the subject of patents held by various companies, and therefore, although this case is technically limited to an argument about 2 particular mutations associated with a higher risk of breast and ovarian cancer, it has enormous implications.
Supreme Court did allow protections on synthetically produced genetic materials. Can you tell us a little bit more about those materials and what your kind of preliminary view on the importance of that qualification on the decision is?
Right. In the Supreme Court decision, although the claims in respect of the naturally occurring DNA were held to be invalid, the court accepted that cDNA or complementary DNA, which is a synthetic product which is produced in the laboratory, was held to be patentable. Now, that really doesn't save the patent because the patent encompasses claims in respect of both naturally occurring DNA and cDNA. So as far as the Australian case is concerned, that upholding of the patenting of cDNA doesn't really have any bearing on the outcome of the Australian case.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the appeal is going to be heard, was it in August? I recall speaking to Rebecca Gilson earlier in the year about the situation regarding costs for your clients. Is it likely that this Supreme Court decision will be beneficial in terms of arguments about how meritorious the overall proceedings are?
Well, again, I don't want to be making statements about what may or may not happen in the federal court, but clearly this is the first occasion anywhere in the world where the question of the patenting of human genes has reached a final appellate court, and therefore it's obviously an important decision, and the fact that it's the unanimous decision of 9 justices when there was a split decision in the Court of Appeals below, I think is important. In terms of costs, well, obviously this case isn't being conducted having regard to the cost, but the judge originally in the Australian case ordered costs against the losing party, which is not unusual in cases such as this, and therefore obviously if the appeal succeeds then one would expect the different cost result would follow, but as I said, I don't want to be making statements about what may or may not happen in an appeal in Australia which is yet to be heard, and no doubt it will be argued that the Australian test of patentability is arguably different than that which exists in the United States.
Professor Cashman, were you surprised by the Supreme Court result?
Look, no, I wasn't. I think it's a sensible decision. If you talk to people at a dinner party about the fact that patent protection exists over human genes, people start to raise their eyebrows. The fact of isolation has been used for a long period of time to justify claims of patentability. But interestingly enough, in the United States proceedings, the United States government changed its mind. It appeared both in the Court of Appeals and in the Supreme Court to say that its view now was that human DNA was not patentable and that the long-standing practice of the Patent Office in granting patents should be overruled.
Is it possible to predict when the deliberation or the judgment in the appeal will be handed down?
No, I wouldn't want to speculate about that. That's obviously a matter for the court. The court regarded this as sufficiently important to convene a bench of 5 judges. Normally an appeal would be heard by 3 judges. It was at one stage anticipated that the Australian case might go straight to the High Court on the legal argument, but there's an issue about facts that needs to be resolved on the appeal. And that meant that it wasn't suitable to go direct to the High Court. Obviously, that factual issue will need to be resolved. Myriad is contending that there are structural and functional and other chemical differences between isolated DNA and naturally occurring DNA. We accept that there are such differences, but we say they're irrelevant because what has been patented is the genetic information which is encoded by the DNA, and that doesn't differ in its natural state compared with its isolated state.
Well, it's a fascinating development, and obviously we'll follow the outcome of your case closely as well. Professor Peter Cashman, thank you very much for joining us on Friday Drive.
My pleasure.
Professor Cashman there, Director of the Social Justice Program at Sydney University Law School, and also barrister acting, I believe, in the Australian Myriad case. Julian Morrow with you on Friday Drive, and it's 20 minutes past six.